The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Tremendous deluge of news, well, what they call news. Once again today, we've sorted it out for you. I've just sent another 150 stories, all collated, divided up, formatted. It'll be posted within probably 10 minutes, and you'll have the whole thing to look at tonight and tomorrow. This is the end of the day, your evening newspaper, as it were. There are some major developments in the SARS 2.0 or SARS-like coronavirus, which has gotten loose out of Wuhan, China, and gone to Thailand, and now the second case reportedly in Japan, as well as the second fatality. Dr. Henry Nyman is back, again, one of the world's preeminent virologists, to share this first hour with us, bring us up to date on that. And I would again ask Henry during the hour to parallel the outbreak and origination of SARS, the original SARS, and how this one seems to be comparing with it. It does appear to be awfully easy to transmit, certainly effectively, even if you don't go to a wet market. And with recombination of these kinds of viruses, always seemingly looking for a quicker way to get into the human cellular defense, if this virus recombines in such a way that it comes up with a master key or a locksmith, it can get out of control, and I mean in many countries, real quick. We've seen that with SARS. Now we're looking at the same kind of thing with this SARS, I call it 2.0. Henry, welcome back. Thanks for being here. Another death, more spreading to Japan. These have interesting aspects to each one of them. Tell us more.
Okay, well, you were right. It is paralleling the SARS outbreak in many different ways. It hasn't really gotten to the point where a lot of healthcare workers are coming down, and there hasn't been any reports of a super spreader. But it's really early relative to what happened back in 2002-2003. It started in 2002 in November in Guangdong province. And there were reports of cases and mystery illness. Didn't know the cause at the time. And things really started to get out of control really at the end of February when a physician who had been treating patients in Guangdong province came to Hong Kong for a wedding, and he went to the Metropole Hotel. And
the famous Metropole Hotel. This is a big part of it, though. It just takes one.
Right, and he was quite ill when he got there. He was only there for a day, and in that time, he his room was up on the ninth floor, actually room 911, and so you know he would take the elevator when going to his room, and he ended up vomiting in the hall outside his door, and. Those events, including the vacuuming up of the dried vomit, managed to get a lot of people exposed, including those that were on the ninth floor.
And, you know, one thing about indoor vacuums, unless they exit outdoors with a long hose into the wall and the vacuum device, all they do is essentially throw the dust in micro fine particulates right out the exhaust of the vacuum, through the bag. Unless you have a very high-level, biologically very safe vacuum system, all you're doing is is filling the air with particulates, potentially deadly.
Right.
It's not, and, not good.
And after the fact, there was a you know, an investigation, and they did take swabs, and you know, they had evidence that the vacuum did spread the virus around in that area.
See, so, nobody knows that, but you people listening, thanks to Henry, and we're right on it. That's true.
So it was a combination of things. Number one, he was he would have certainly fallen into the super spreader category. He was very, very ill. He died. His brother died. The woman, the 78-year-old woman who was a tourist in Hong Kong who lived in Toronto, when she went home, she died. Her son, who was taking care of her, died. And then there were three sisters from Singapore. I think they all survived, but they kind of got infected a large number of patients and healthcare workers there, and then there was a someone who was visiting who actually lived in Hong Kong, and he was hospitalized there, and they used a nebulizer to help treat him, which put the virus in the air in his room, and interns on doing rounds came by, and they all got infected, and many others on that floor got infected. And
let me point out something here. Whenever any of us go into a hospital, and I don't care where you are, you're really rolling the dice. These are silly things: a nebulizer, vacuum cleaners in a hotel, sucking up and throwing out dried vomit from someone who obviously was ill, so ill he threw up in the hall. How rude. But beyond that, you are really taking a chance. And if you go into a hospital, I've said this before, and you see carpeting on the floors, you should think twice about going in there. You cannot clean the viral and bacterial and other contaminants out of carpeting on a hospital floor easily at all. If at all. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay, so as a result of that one individual, the virus ended up going to Toronto, to Hanoi, to Singapore, to Hong Kong, and I believe there's even one that went to Taiwan, although Taiwan, I think, got seeded more dramatically with a tour group that went to Hong Kong and then flew back, and they infected other people on the airplane. And then when they landed in Taiwan, they kind of just spread it out on the island, and caused a major outbreak on Taiwan. And actually, the sequencing pretty much confirmed that that all of these infections that I just mentioned were from this one physician, because he had his coronavirus had a 29 nucleotide deletion in the open reading frame number 8. And that was in all of these international cases. So all I believe every sequence from an international case actually had this 29 nucleotide deletion in it. And the earlier cases in Guangdong province didn't have that deletion. And so it was, although there were some other deletions in the same area, but 29 nucleotides was in this physician and all of these patients that were in the Metropole Hotel who, you know, were tested in these various countries. So that all happened. I mean, he died on, or he checked out of the hotel. I think he died shortly thereafter, but he checked out of the hotel on February 22nd. Uh-huh. And then all of these cases started showing up really in March, because it took a little while for the virus to incubate and cause symptoms. And you know, nobody really knew what was going on. So, I mean, the woman who went to Toronto, she actually died at home. She never even got to the hospital, but her son, who took care of her, got to the hospital and spread the virus there. And, so, you know, timing wise, we're a little bit early as far as, what it is in the year. And it probably started a little bit earlier in 2002. Uh-huh. One of the big concerns is the Chinese New Year starts at the end of the month. And, uh-huh. and so that's another way to kind of move the virus around. And so people have been paying attention to, you know, the current outbreak. And they kind of lose track of, how the old one began, how the SARS outbreak began. And they kind of remember towards the end how many people were infected, how many people were dying, and what the case fatality rate was, which is around 10%. But they tend to forget that at the beginning, it wasn't that dramatic. That there was a report right after it was revealed, you know, the role of the Metropole Hotel was covered in the media. And uh-huh. that report kind of gave an update. And it indicated that, you know, the outbreak began in November, and there had been about 300 cases before the Metropole Hotel. And of those 300 cases, there were only 5 deaths. So you can see where the second death was registered here. And the number of reported confirmed cases in Wuhan remains at 41. But now the death is increased by one up to two now. And the first case was 65. This case was 69. And that's kind of what happened with SARS, is most of the deaths were in, you know, adults in their 40s, 50s, and 60s or so. There weren't many over 60 that got, you know, in their 70s or more that got infected. And most of the ones that were in their 20s and 30s recovered. So the deaths were similar. Some did have comorbidities, although this latest one, who was 69, it's not clear that he did. So he ended up having problems with his heart that ended up leading to his death. But in any event,
okay, so let me just bring everything up to date. As far as paralleling the spread and growth of original SARS compared to the current version, we seem to be ahead of that timeline a little bit if you were to lay them out side by side. Is that correct?
Well, we've got two deaths already, so that's pretty quick. Two deaths out of officially in Wuhan anyway, only 41. And so, that's about a 5%. And it's not a real number because there are still others that are in critical condition. So, I mean, it would be 5%.
We're not hearing anything about those people. You're right.
If everybody else survives, right? And and so it's a little bit higher on the case fatality rate. And it's certainly ahead of schedule as far as the international spread. I mean, the outbreak in Guangdong province was pretty much confined to, and Guangdong is just north of Hong Kong. And so it was confined to Guangdong province. It had not gone to any other countries until after the Metropole Hotel. So it was, so those people started flying out of there in late February. So we're kind of a month ahead of that as far as dispersing the virus, and we're ahead of the case fatality rate. And we haven't really had the first super spreader yet. And the concern is, basically what the situation is in China and whether the cases are being reported. One of the disconcerting pieces of news really came from this case in Japan.
Right.
And this really just came out last night was when it was announced that this person had been identified and confirmed to have the virus. And then it started with just one media report that, A, it was in Japanese, and B, it was just a media report, not directly from the health department. And so it said that he had the pneumonia, and they confirmed the pneumonia. They didn't really quite say they had confirmed the virus. But it definitely said confirmed. And they definitely said, this was the second case, confirmed outside of Wuhan or outside of China even. So it sounded like it was real, but it took a little while before anybody else said anything, or at least before I could find it, or anybody else, because it's put up on Twitter pretty quickly. And then later that night, the exact same stories started showing up on other media outlets. So they didn't add any additional information, but, it was clear that it was causing a stir in Japan. And then the report from the Department of Health came out, and that gave quite a bit more detail. And it said that this person, lived just south of Tokyo, and he had gone to Wuhan, and he developed a fever on January 3rd. And then 3 days later, he flew back to Japan. And even though he had developed the fever, and even though they did a fever check at the airport, he had taken medication for the fever, and he got through the check at the airport.
We've talked about this in the past. Hey, would you quickly, just really quickly, explain what a fever check consists of at the airport? People missed that the other day, I think. It's important.
Well, for the fever checks, they're pretty straightforward. They actually can monitor people going by. I mean, you're not even going through a machine. You can be just walking. They kind of
everybody temp is scanned.
And they take a look at everybody.
That's right.
And if you're above whatever number they got to set up at, they can see red, and they can see where in your body there is the heat. And And then they essentially, if they see that you've got a fever, they'll call you over and ask, you know, where you're arriving. I don't know how detailed, but, you know, basically they're concerned about people from Wuhan. So they ask where mm-hmm. you're from, or they might even mm-hmm. just zero in on flights coming from Wuhan. So they might not bother with the asking. And that's probably the most effective way to do that, because at least they'll know that, you know, they're getting off the plane to arrive from Wuhan. So they might be just setting it up right outside of the planning area, and screen as people, you know, kind of come off the plane. But in any event, they can see when people have an elevated fever, and then they'll try to get some information as to where they're from. If they're zeroing in on Wuhan, they might not even ask that. They might already know where they're from. Mm-hmm. And then they, if it's a significant fever, especially if they've got some additional symptoms, they'll quarantine them. I mean, they'll essentially have them go to the hospital and check them out. And it's not a very efficient method. That's why it was so remarkable that the one patient was identified from Thailand, because they were doing fever checks when SARS happened. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, there were a lot more reported cases at the time, and they were screening everybody that was coming from China. They weren't just taking one or two cities. And in spite of that, I'm not sure if anybody was ever confirmed. I know that nobody was confirmed in Toronto, because Toronto was real concerned after they had their outbreak, and nobody was confirmed in, I think, South Korea, and I don't think they were confirmed in Taiwan. So it wasn't like, you know, it picked up X percent of the people that are there, because, you know, if there's an incubation period, so you could be infected and not yet have developed a fever, or you could be taking, you know, some type of medication for the fever and not have a fever when you, get off the plane and, you know, get a fever as soon as you get to your hotel or wherever you're going.
Okay. So we got to stop there.
Hold on. It's not efficient. Okay, go ahead.
All right. The fever is not efficient. All right, good. Back in just a minute with Henry. Hold on. We're going to bring you further up to date on this new virus that has gone to two other countries already. Back in a minute. And just in case any of you have wondered, whatever happened to the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC for short, that's doing very well, but you never hear about it. So far, 3,277 confirmed cases. 3,277 confirmed cases. 2,235 confirmed deaths. When you're dead, you're dead. So, pretty high mortality rate, 60, well, we'll just call it two-thirds. It's right there, and it's just waiting for a plane ride to somewhere else. We may already have it here and not know it. We just don't know. A lot of Africans have come here from the DRC, allowed in by the Trump administration and the Trump State Department under the UN Refugee Resettlement Program, which is a misnomer if there ever was one. They're bringing them in right from the DRC. And they're being picked up off the streets and told, you're going to America. Do you have any problems with that? Nope. Put them on a plane and bring them over. And that's it. Okay, back to Henry and the latest on this SARS-like coronavirus. Let's talk a little bit about the rapidity of recombination. And that means the virus is actually reconfiguring itself. It's changing. And it's looking for an easier way. It's a virus. It wants to infect. It's looking for an easier way to crack somebody's immunological barriers. Go ahead, Dr. Nyman.
Okay, well, let me finish up with this patient, and I'll talk a little bit about the recombination. This new virus is already recombined. So and coronavirus is recombined pretty regularly, and there's even some evidence that this virus is recombined with coronaviruses from three different species. So it's
wow.
There you go. And actually, it was the swine flu had there was reassortment, but it had it's got eight different gene segments, and it had segments from humans, pigs, and birds, and including some that were in North America and some that were in Asia. So these viruses tend to do a lot of mixing and matching and pop up with something that you haven't really seen before, and it can cause all kind of problems because there's selection for the ones that kind of evade the immune system, and it kind of builds over time if it's in a new host. And so this virus is in a new host, and one of the hosts was this 30-something visitor traveler who lived in Kanagawa Prefecture, and which is just south of Tokyo, and he went to Wuhan, and so he had symptoms on January 3rd. He returned on the 6th. He got by the fever monitor. He saw the doctor the same day, and he mentioned that he was coming from Wuhan, and then the doctor said, come back if things don't get better. And then by the 10th, he had not gotten better. He still had a fever. He saw the doctor, and he got hospitalized. So he was admitted on January 10th. They took x-rays. I believe he was diagnosed with pneumonia. And then that was last Friday. And then on Tuesday, he still hadn't gotten that much better. And so they notified the Department of Health. And then he ended up getting confirmed. And his symptoms subsided, and he was discharged yesterday. And the report for the Department of Health had all of the above, and they added that he they had interviewed him, and he had not been at the seafood market in Wuhan, the South China Seafood Castle. I've seen it by multiple names, but that's how they listed them in the Department of Health report. But then they kind of tacked on at the end, potential close contact with unspecified pneumonia patients in China. So that was a significant eye-opener, and that was as of last night. And so it was official that he was a confirmed case. It wasn't quite clear how he was infected, and it did indicate that he was not at the wet market that was associated with most of the initial cases. And then the real story, well, the thing that makes it more complicated or more concerning, I guess, is a report that came out this morning that indicated that the unspecified pneumonia patient, at least one of them, was his father. And he was staying at his father's house in Wuhan, and his father had pneumonia. So that was pretty convincing evidence that he was infected by his father. And it was also pretty convincing evidence that his father hadn't been diagnosed. Now, it's not 100%. It's not really clear. They haven't used his name. They haven't given any detail of his father other than saying the father also had not been to the seafood market. So whether his father has already been tested, they didn't say in the report that it was, you know, he had contact with a confirmed case. And it didn't say in the media reports this morning that he was, that his father was a confirmed case, but they did say his father had the new type of pneumonia. So, you know, it's conceivable his father was confirmed, but it seems likely that his father wasn't confirmed. And so, another report this afternoon said that he had, been to Wuhan, but they didn't say in the report tonight, they didn't say that anybody was even had the, any family members had the pneumonia. They said that his family members in Japan didn't have symptoms, but they didn't really say anything about his father. But I think that it's reasonable to assume that his father had not been hospitalized, because if his father had been confirmed, he wouldn't have been at home with his son. They would have, kept him in the hospital and put him in isolation if he was confirmed to have this virus. And if the son was infected by his father, which seems, you know, virtually certain, then he not only had symptoms, but he was contagious. And so, in all likelihood, the son was infected by his father, and his father is not a confirmed case. And probably his father is not even a tested case. Mm-hmm. And then it came out that the son tested negative the first time. They actually tested him twice to get a positive.
So the virus was still incubating. That has to be it. If he tested negative, or the test was bogus somehow.
The test is new. So the sequences had just come out. So they just got the test going and are distributing it. And it's possible that the test is new. It's possible the person administering the test is new. It's possible something went wrong with the test, or it's possible that whatever sample they got wasn't good. That, you know, he probably wasn't so sick that he was.
So that's
incubated.
The second. We're running out of time here a little bit, but that's the second case in Japan now, and both flown in.
No. There's only one case in Japan. The father is in Wuhan. The case lives in Japan, near Tokyo. He went to Wuhan and stayed at his father's house in Wuhan. His father was in Wuhan, and his father had pneumonia.
Father lives
then
there.
Correct.
Is this guy Chinese or Japanese?
Chinese.
The guy who, the 31-year-old who went to Japan.
Both. Right. He and his father. Right. So
he and his father are what? Are they Chinese or Japanese?
Chinese.
Okay. All right. So the question is, how long was he in Japan off the airliner until he was diagnosed and confirmed, or missed the first time? So how much was he on the loose in the public?
They said he developed a fever on the 3rd and came back on the 6th. So he had symptoms for 3 days while he was in China. They said that he stayed exclusively at his father's house, so he wasn't in a hotel or anything.
Okay. What happened when he got back to Japan is my question. What did he do? Do we know?
He first went and saw the doctor.
He didn't notice. He wasn't with the people. He went to the doctor.
Yeah, but the doctor sent him home. So, you know, he didn't right. stay at the doctor's. He came at the, he arrived on the 6th. He saw a doctor the day he arrived. He told the doctor uh-huh. that he was coming from Wuhan. Then the doctor said, you know, come back if you don't get better. And he didn't get better. And so four days later, he came back and saw the doctor on the 10th. And then that day they put him in the hospital. So he was symptomatic
out and about,
between the 6th and the 10th in Japan.
Yeah. All right.
Near Tokyo. And he right. was out, well, I don't know how much out and about he was, but he was symptomatic for 3 days mm-hmm. In Wuhan. Now I don't know what his activities were on either of those locations, mm-hmm. you know, when he right. was symptomatic. And like I say, he didn't have the fever when he deplaned in.
Well, let's hope he wasn't a greeter at a major department store and he went back to work for 3 days, feeling kind of crappy, but still doing his job.
Yeah,
you never know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
You don't know. I tend to doubt that because I think he knew that the reason he went back is he wasn't getting better. So, I mean, he was sick when he arrived. He was sick before he got on the plane even. And he didn't have the fever not high enough to be picked up by the scanners because he was uh-huh. basically taking medications that kept the fever under control. And he went back to the doctor. So I doubt that he went to work between doctor's visits because he kind of knew he was sick and he knew his father had pneumonia. So anyway, that's where the things, and he's been discharged now. So he was discharged yesterday. So, mm-hmm. you know, he had to improve fairly quickly between the 10th and the 15th because he was only in the hospital for 5 days. And
how did they determine, Henry, how did they determine he's good enough to be released and no longer considered a spreader? How do they determine that?
They would probably do a test before he gets discharged. So he probably got tested again on the 15th and
a PCR?
Came back negative. Yeah, that's typically what they do. They take a swab and do PCR. Now, in Japan, they may very well have that set up at many locations so they can get results back very quickly because they've had mm-hmm. you know, issues with bird flu, although it didn't, not human, but certainly outbreaks. And it's a densely populated area. So they're probably pretty quick at monitoring and setting things up so they can identify people that are infected. And like I say, the sequence came out and kits were made up and instructions were put at the WHO site on, what the primer should be. I mean, I'm pretty sure, equipped labs could do the PCR test without uh-huh. actually even uh-huh. getting anything because they would have the sequences to make the primers and you can make the primers pretty quickly, and then everything else is kind of cookbook stuff as long as you got all the ingredients.
Right.
So in any event, it's concerning because not so much how much walking around he did, but the fact that he did test negative the first time, and he almost certainly was infected by his father.
Well, he was absolutely shedding viruses on the airplane. He was shedding viruses
right.
on the airplane. Had to be.
Right, and the source of the virus for his father is unknown. And so those are a lot of unknowns. And the fact that I don't think he got that sick because, like I said, he went in the hospital on Friday and he was out the following Thursday. So he was in the hospital. I think he was only there 5 days. But he wasn't hospitalized that long, and therefore I don't think he got to the level, you know, I'm sure he didn't go on an ECMO machine. He wasn't, you know, that ill, but he, it may be the same thing for his father, that his father was sick enough to infect him. And he was sick enough to register positive, but only on the second test. And so, you know, it kind of says that even people that are positive, at least initially, can be a false negative. And it depends how aggressively they get tested. You know, not everybody's going to be tested twice. I think he got tested twice because of his history. He came from
kind of common sense to do it.
And so he's a concern. The other case that died that was announced today, that's a concern, indicating that, you know, the fatality rate is relatively high with two deaths out of the confirmed cases. I think there might be a half a dozen that have been discharged. So and I think most of the ones that are still in the hospital are not in critical condition anymore. So I think there's still another five that are in serious or critical condition that aren't quite out of the woods yet, although maybe just one or two of those five are in that more severe.
How quickly can this virus recombine? In other words, change its profile. It's cellular it's viral profile, so it can crack cells.
Right. Well, usually you need a couple different viruses, and so far there have been eight sequences that have been released. I think they're only from four different people, though, and those four sequences are pretty close. One's a little bit different. The others are almost identical. So if you're infected with an almost identical virus, then it's not going to be quite as dramatic in the recombination. If you've got a couple fairly different versions, then you can have more rapid change. Just to give you an idea, I was kind of waiting for GeneBank to have it in the searchable database, and it still isn't there yet. So I just went ahead and started looking at these viruses today a little bit more closely. And, you know, I had mentioned earlier that that this virus is most closely related to a bat virus, and actually a couple of bat viruses, which were from a lab in Nanjing. They were actually collected on the in 2015 and 2017. And I was looking at the comparisons along with another virus that was from Longquan. But both of these areas are much closer to Wuhan than the collections for most of the bat viruses, because they were collected in southern China, because they were closer to Guangdong province, because they were trying to figure out what the natural host to the SARS virus was. And when I took a look, I saw that the Longquan it was a recombinant. That it basically matched the two Nanjing for a region of, it was by 4,000 or 5,000 nucleotides, and then it started to go back to the coronaviruses that were more common in southern China. And just past where it had done that recombination, the current virus diverged from these viruses that were from Nanjing, and they basically didn't match anything. And so I figured I would just take that little region that didn't match anything and put it up against the database all by itself. And then I restricted the database to just other coronaviruses. And when I did that, it turned out that region just passed this region of recombination with the bats down here. ended up having short stretches that matched three different viruses, not coronaviruses. It matched chicken coronaviruses from Canada, and it matches cat coronaviruses, and then it matched the civet cat coronavirus that had been isolated from the second SARS outbreak. So it, most people probably don't recall, but there were actually two outbreaks in southern China. There was the one that we were talking about, but then they culled all the wild animals and they got it under control by by June or so, and then it came back at the end of the year. And so there were cases at the end of the year, and the virus looked a little bit different, and it had actually undergone some kind of recombination, and it was infecting civet cats again. And so this sequence came from a civet cat that was infected at the end of the year, and then they got rid of all the wild animals, and you know, there haven't been any reported cases since you know, early 2004. So in this case, this virus has picked up a little bit from several different sources. One way to do that, of course, is these live markets. When they're in these live markets, they tend to have animals that are in cages, and they're stacked up, and they're fairly densely, you know, packed into these stalls. And therefore, the virus can jump from one species to the other. And what I mentioned earlier is there's over 40,000 coronavirus sequences at GenBank, and they infect all different species, you know, a lot of different species, and they're relatively specific for that.
All right, quick questions here. We only have a minute, not even. The African swine fever virus has killed 1/4 of all the pigs on planet Earth. Hundreds of millions of them have died this year. This is apparently a hemorrhagic virus. I don't know much about it yet. But half the pigs in all of China are dead. Last year there were 440 million pigs in China. 50% of the world's pigs total have either died of African swine fever, ASF, or been killed to try to, it's a cull operation, try to stamp out the virus. It came from East Africa in 2007. It has run rampant. 1/4 of the world's pigs dead. Now, if you understand this virus for some reason has dialed in pigs and gone after them, and they're either killing the pigs, the viruses, or the pigs are being killed to cull them. The same thing could happen to us, all right? It's possible. It's on the board. It's on the table. That's the big concern with any of these things, whether they be novel or repeats like the Ebola virus in DRC. It's a repeat. They've had about 10 or 12 different Ebola virus outbreaks in DRC. This one's the worst. 60% plus mortality rate. In terms of pigs, when you lose 1/4 of the domesticated pigs in the world, that's bad. All right, we're out of time, Henry, but a comment on that virus compared to the potential of another SARS-type coronavirus.
Well, it's just a different type of virus, and you know, in the past, it wasn't really this lethal. I haven't really looked at the sequences that closely for the latest outbreak to see exactly what it's done. It's a larger virus. It's a double-stranded DNA virus. I look mostly at RNA viruses. And so the viruses I'm most familiar with are RNA. This one's DNA. And but I know that it hasn't caused this type of outbreak, you know, in the past. This is fairly recent that it's been around.
It's in
for a
wild
while.
Wild pigs, domesticated pigs.
Right.
It is really a bad one. Fatality rate for pigs, 100%, near 99%. So the virus probably did most of the killing in these infected herds. So that's just something to watch as well. Okay. Thank you, Henry, for the update. We'll watch this closely, and we appreciate everything you sent, as always.
Okay. Okay. There'll be an update soon, I'm sure. Okay. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Good night. All right. Be right back with Gerald in just a couple minutes. Hold on.